Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening.
Shut down.
That's right. Oops.
It
goes there.
Yeah.
No, I think they pulled the video
they
on
the
you
video, yeah.
On YouTube.
I think so.
That's why it's blank.
Yeah. Oh, kind of interesting how that works.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back.
Leo's blown it. Yes, just go down there. So just think about it. 600,000 spent fuel rods blown up in the air.
That's totally absurd. Absolutely absurd.
How can they evacuate Tokyo?
They can't.
How many people are there?
30 million people. 30 million people, they can't evacuate Tokyo.
Here's something.
Here's another one. Japan and New Zealand earthquakes and volcanic eruptions were predicted last month by solar watchers, and here it's one of them.
David Icke has been saying for years the sun has a fundamental energetic connection to the earth, as does the moon. So when the sun changes and the moon's influence changes, the earth must be affected. Obviously, the greater the change, the greater the effect. We are in a time of powerful solar activity. An increased impact from the moon as it moves closer to the Earth this weekend, corresponding with the full moon phase. Meteorologist and astrophysicist Piers Corbin says earthquakes and extreme weather are from the same family. And let's listen to his YouTube comments.
Yeah.
Earthquakes and extreme weather events are in the same family. It doesn't mean they all happen together. The moon and the sun affect the two are different, but of course related. Even I think the moon's perigee in terms of earthquakes is slightly overstated. What we have is solar effects and lunar modulation of those solar effects on the Earth, which gives you weather and earthquake triggers. And then in addition for earthquake triggers, we will have lunar tidal effects. And it is true, the lunar perigee will give a bigger crustal distortion, which can help trigger earthquakes. But to make them really happen, you also need the solar driver. Now, to get a big solar driver of earthquakes, and indeed of storm events, it works best, certainly for earthquakes, to have X-level solar flares and associated proton events, which is maybe just a sign of a big solar flare. And you need the rush of particles from the sun, that is the coronal mass ejections, to also hit Earth. And if that happens, especially near actually a lunar nodal crossing, that's when the moon is in the same plane as its the travel of the Earth around the sun, then you're very likely to get an earthquake. And also, probably even more likely, an earthquake a fortnight later, when whatever happened on the sun or the other side of the sun comes round again.
So,
and that has big implications for the current situation.
There was also a volcano erupted immediately after the earthquake.
Yes. I mean, the difficulty with all this stuff is there's earthquakes are always happening, lots and lots of little ones. And now there's a lot of obvious movement going on in Earth tectonic plates. A lot's going to carry on happening anyway. So the question is, can we give increased risk of certain things over and above all this kind of increased activity? And I think we can. We did warn after the New Zealand earthquake, which was preceded by a big solar flare and the coronal mass ejection hit. We warned there were going to be a lot more extreme earthquakes in the next 2 years. And, well, this is the first of them, and I do not think it is the last of them. In terms of predicting actual earthquakes, that is astoundingly difficult. We don't purport to do that. What we are investigating, though, is increased risk of earthquake events. And we can say with reasonable clarity that between now and the 19th of March, we know there is an increased risk of general storm events, and some of those will be associated with enhancing earthquake risk. but it might not be a big deal that you can distinguish from the general increase of earthquake noise now happening. However, between the round about the 24th to 27th, we would say there is a very much heightened risk of major earthquake events. Obviously, there is a real danger of a, you know, China syndrome explosion. If that happens, and there will be a lot of fallout, luckily, in a way, most of it will go across the Pacific and will be largely dissipated before it reaches America. But it is a real danger. I mean, obviously, the Japanese authorities are doing everything they can to prevent that, including losing the whole future of those nuclear plants by whacking them full of seawater. But whether or not that seawater can do what they want, i.e. completely terminate any nuclear runaway, I actually doubt.
And what is the China syndrome?
The China syndrome is the idea, it was a film, where the nuclear reactor core gets so hot that it just melts the floor underneath it and drills towards China. My view of nuclear power always has been that it's dangerous, because even though you can make the reactors themselves pretty safe, there's always the issue of backup systems and the issue of waste disposal and storage prior to disposal, and therefore these systems are open to terrorist attack, bombing in wartime, and so on. And the waste material itself lasts thousands of years. So, you know, they were unpopular for a long time, and they've only become popular because of the propaganda from the global warmers, where they're more prepared for people to die of radiation than, you know, then admit that their theory of CO2 controlling the climate is complete lies and nonsense. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that nuclear power is overrated anyway. But I would say, obviously, if you're going to have any of it, putting it near to fault lines like this is not a good thing.
There was a big solar spewing out just prior to this earthquake.
Absolutely. This earthquake was triggered by a big X-level solar flare and the following coronal mass ejection, which hit Earth around about the 10th of March, and then on the 11th we had this earthquake. And it was also there was helpful lunar nodal effects as well around that time. Guys, that means everything is connected. Well, fine, I accept everything is connected. But it's also become a political game, so people talk about Gaia, then believe man is upsetting Gaia, so therefore they justify all sorts of crazy policies like nuclear power in the name of preventing man's CO2. Now, this is madness. So, you know, you can believe in Gaia, but the way it's used or misused as a policymaker, I think, is absurd.
Gaia is the belief that the Earth is a living organism. Do you think the Earth has a consciousness?
No, I don't think the Earth has a consciousness. We are a consciousness. We're part of the Earth. And I think that is as far as it goes.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That was
kind of frightening. And the guy had predicted this a month before it happened.
Now, let's follow up with what he has to say about nuclear, about reactors.
That's the same guy, Piers Corbin. All reactors are nuclear bombs.
It kind of follows up on what he said about the sun and the moon being able to...
Well, how do you read the danger zones and the information we're getting from Japan? Do you feel comfortable with it?
No. There still is very serious danger. Look, the first thing to understand is we have not had an announcement that all these reactors have been turned off. The reason is they cannot turn them off. In other words, they are actually now out of control. The question is, are we going to get a nuclear runaway or not? Now, the nuclear runaway can be prevented by adequate neutron absorbers put in there into the reactor core, preferably, such as boron. Now, that has not been achieved. What we're told is that putting boron around in the containment vessel, yes, but as far as I can see, that alone could be insufficient. I'm not saying it is insufficient, but it could be insufficient, in which case there is still a risk of a major explosion unless we hear an announcement from the Japanese government that...
Are these reactors literally nuclear bombs?
Every reactor is potentially a nuclear bomb. I mean, the reactor is a nuclear bomb in slow motion. And if it goes, then it can be a big problem. But of course, when it does go, it also goes off because all bits of it explode away from themselves. The main wind is across the Pacific, and of course, crossing the Pacific towards the US of A, anything would be pretty well dissipated, but not necessarily entirely so.
And,
but, you know, I don't want to overstate dangers, but I think there still are dangers.
And in the development of the earthquakes, you foresee them moving towards the west coast of the Americas?
Well, in terms of earthquake risk around the world, the west coast of America is a high-risk area, but not the highest. The highest parts are Japan and bits of around Indonesia and also parts of New Zealand. But in the next 2 years, it is clear to us there is a heightened risk and there will actually be more serious earthquake occurrences. So the west coast of the USA in the coming 2 years is definitely under greater danger than it has been for decades.
It seems to me the last 10 years we've lived through more extremes than in the rest of our lifetimes. I mean, something is major going on in our solar system. Can you put your finger on it?
Yes, we can, yes. It's a combination of solar effects and lunar modulation. And we're in a very interesting period of being between an odd and even solar cycle with a low average solar activity and sudden big hits of events on the sun, which are making extreme solar flares and proton events as well. And those are causing the extreme weather events we've had. Also, with the lunar modulation blocking of the jet stream to give ongoing extreme situations such as flooding. So we've got a combination of extreme flooding and extreme storms. And there will be more of this. And generally speaking, similar factors cause the earthquakes. So there's going to be more of this for the next 2 years. Now, the last time this sort of thing happened, this level of seriousness was about 132 years ago in terms of the weather, but in terms of earthquakes, it looks like, well, for various reasons, it's half that time, 66 years or so ago. So in the 1940s, there was a lot of very extreme earthquakes as well, around 66 so years ago, and we are in that type of situation again. Now, it's not clockwork, and we can't just take something from them and project it forwards, but certainly there's a kind of some similarity of risk reappearing.
You know, in
we can make specific forecasts, certainly, of tropical storm events, but earthquakes, all we can talk about is a kind of risk in certain time periods.
You know, in a Shakespearean play, when the character is very agitated, you see storms happening behind them. You do. This is very much a Shakespearean. And I just wondered, you just mentioned the 40s, and we had the Second World War. I wonder if there's any correlation with human psychology and extreme events.
Well, I don't know. All I can say is I give full support to all the Arabs in North Africa and the Middle East fighting for democratic rights. Whether this is connected with solar events, I don't know. Certainly, maybe people's moods are affected by solar events. But I would say a thing to get clear about the current period is that the con merchants in the Global Warming Brigade will be and have already been jumping up and down saying these earthquakes have something to do with man-made global warming. Now, look, that is complete, utter nonsense, lies and trickery. And people that say that should be taken to task. And in my opinion, if there was a proper accountability revolution around the world, we'd have a crime of committing lies against humanity. And these people that put forward this nonsense would be called to account.
I like that
Thank
idea.
Thank you.
I like what he said, that people would be called to task for lies against humanity like global warming.
You can go to Pierce Corbin, Corbyn.
You get it on YouTube.
On YouTube. All reactors are nuclear bombs. You can pick that up right on YouTube. Pierce Corbin, PIERSCORBYN. Fascinating. Dennis won't let you see this on your TV. I wonder why.
Let's take a look. This is also from YouTube.
People have no chance to get their personal items out. They have no chance to call for help. And this is far away from most media outlets. You are amongst the very few journalists who have even seen this. European or American journalists who have even been here because people are afraid to come or it's too hard to come.
One of the things we were told in Gaza by a very respected Palestinian psychologist who had just completed a study of 1,000 Palestinian children was that they had discovered that many of these Palestinian children no longer had a will to live, that they were so dehumanized and so affected by seeing their fathers particularly beaten by Israeli defense forces, that the psychological condition is one of the dimensions of the conflict that is not widely understood.
Palestinians called for an international observer force that would stop the violence, but this action was blocked by Israel. Finally, a group of Palestinian and Israeli human rights activists together created the International Solidarity Movement, which has brought people from around the world of all ages and backgrounds to provide a nonviolent international presence to try to fill this need. Rachel Corey, a 23-year-old American student, went to Gaza to join in these efforts, sending back emails to her parents.
I have been in Palestine for 2 weeks and 1 hour now, and I still have very few words to describe what I see. It is most difficult for me to think about what's going on here when I sit down to write back to the United States. Something about the virtual portal into luxury. I don't know if many of the children here have ever existed without tank shell holes in their walls and the towers of an occupying army surveying them constantly from the near horizon. I think, although I'm not entirely sure, that even the smallest of these children understand that life is not like this everywhere.
It was Sunday afternoon in Charlotte, about noon actually, and I received a phone call, and my son-in-law, Kelly, was on the phone, and he asked if Craig was there. And something about the way he asked made me realize, I felt right away that something was wrong. And then I asked, why, Kelly? And he hesitated for a minute, and he said, we've had some very sad news. And then my daughter, Sarah, I could hear her in the background, and she got on the telephone, and she said, Mom, it's Rachel. And I think the first words out of my mouth then were, is she dead?
No one has a kind of
knowledge was protecting a doctor's home. And that's important to realize. And the three children, his wife, she knew that family, and that doctor felt that Rachel was like a daughter. And he bought that house. It was in the middle of the neighborhood. There were other rows of houses between his house and the border. Those other homes, those other streets were all destroyed, and now it's his turn. And I've had people say, well, she was in a war zone. And Cindy points out that war zone is people's, it is people's neighborhoods. That, those are children.
I'm here for other children. I'm here because I care. I'm here because children everywhere are suffering, and because 40,000 people die each day from hunger. I'm here because those people are mostly children. We have got to understand that the poor are all around us, and we're ignoring them. We have got to understand that these deaths are preventable. We have got to understand that people in third world countries think and care and smile and cry just like us. We have got to understand that they are us. We are them. My dream is to stop hunger by the year 2000. My dream is to give the poor a chance. My dream is to save the 40,000 people who die each day. My dream can and will come true if we all look into the future and see the light that shines there.
That was Rachel Corey in the fifth grade. The U.S. Congress has refused her parents' request for an independent investigation into her death.
Wow. It's a very sick society in Israel. And
it's a very sick Congress.
Sick Congress, sick United States, and goddamn Israel, goddamn
well,
American Congress. It's just a goddamnable place, you know. I can do that to the Palestinians. I can do that to anybody. And,
well, they've started
it,
again.
It's horrible. It's just horrible.
Today?
Yeah. They just passed it. Speaking of General Electric.
You know, they've brought pollution to the river Niamey, the Housatonic. They've brought pollution to to the great river, the Hudson, and the Hudson Valley, and the Hudson River.
Right. They're responsible for over two-thirds of all the brownfields in this country, right? And, they're just a horrible business. And, you know...
And they now export their misery, all their weapons and everything
else.
Yeah,
they're one of the world's largest weapons manufacturers. It is becoming apparent that GE, rather than bringing good things to life, has a unique ability to cozy up to government, massage regulations, and bring dangerous toxins into our lives. And I mean seriously dangerous. New York Times now tells us about the containment vessels at the damaged nuclear power plants in Japan are manufactured by GE. The type of containment vessel and pressure suppression system used in the failing reactors at Japan's Fukushima plant and in 23 American reactors at 16 plants is physically less robust, and it has long been thought to be more suppressible to failure.
More susceptible to failure.
In any emergency than competing designs. GE began making the Mark I boiling water reactors in the 1960s, marketing them as cheaper and easier to build, in part because they used a comparatively smaller and less expensive containment structure.
Yeah.
Sons
of
bitches.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So we're just... This is from Economic Policy Journal. Yeah. Let's see. The type of containment vessels and pressure suppression system used in the failing reactors at Japan.
Fukushima Daiichi plant.
And in 23 American reactors at 16 plants. Is physically less robust and has long been thought to be more susceptible to failure in an emergency.
GE began making the Mark I boiling water reactors in the 1960s. We read that. GE is also heavily involved with the new CF light bulbs we all be forced to buy starting in 2014. According to a footnote to a Tim Carney piece on GE and do note, this type footnote means GE corporates got Carney or his paper to tone down what was Carney's column, but look at the dirt that was left in the tone dome.
The original version of this article stated that GE lobbied to kill the incandescent bulb. It was imprecise. This was imprecise. In 2007, GE opposed proposals to explicitly outlaw incandescents. Instead, the company advocated simply setting efficiency standards for all bulbs, regardless of what type of bulb. This had the known effect of outlawing all traditional incandescents, but leaving open the possibility of high-efficiency incandescents.
Bottom line, setting aside the weasel words that GE likely demanded be amended to the column, GE, for all practical purposes, was a new CFL bulb, which they manufacture, that killed the incandescents. So what is the big deal about the new bulbs, aside from the fact that they are more expensive and some question whether they are really more efficient? According to Congressman Ted Poe, the EPA requires you to evacuate children and everyone else from a room when you break one of these light bulbs, then open windows to ventilate the room for 15 minutes and leave the room yourself. You see, these wonderful new bulbs contain the very poisonous element mercury. Concerns about mercury's toxicity have led to mercury thermometers and sphygmomanometers being largely phased out in clinical environments, yet the bastards at GE advocated efficiency standards that will result in all of us having these mercury micro-dirty bombs in the rooms of our houses.
Great stuff. You are bringing to life here, GE. So, you know, this is staggering, and, you know, it just staggers the imagination, I tell you. Wow, we've been so goddamn duped, it's unbelievable. Oh, man. So, anyway, let's move on here. Real life imitating art or more predictive programming. Mount Fuji, I read in red from
Akira Kurosawa's dream.
Let's see.
WI unions will destroy Walker Loving Bank by pulling $1 billion.
Good. All right. The Wisconsin unions will destroy Walker Loving Bank by pulling $1 billion. That's great. M&I Banks is Wisconsin's biggest and gave a ton of money to union-busting
cocksucker.
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 Yeah, Scott Walker. Now the unions are targeting both M&I and the Guardian Bank giant in the process of acquiring it.
And the Canadian banking giant in the process.
A couple of firemen stomped in on Saturday and withdrew $192,000 on Saturday, in the branch across this from the state capitol. Now the WI unions are deciding how to best leverage the $1 billion in pension funds held by the Walker Loving Bank. So they're going to destroy this bank, which is great. Great. That's what we have to do. The nation...
It's good to remind these corporations that there are risks as well as profits involved in supporting right-wing political campaigns, says Mark Weisbrot, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Unions must use their economic power to fight for labor rights. With over $6 trillion of workers' money in retirement plans, pension funds, profit-sharing and stock plans, union reserve funds, workers have the ability to reshape the economy and political priorities of the economic elite.
Good. Yeah, that's good news. That's good news. I mean, I'm glad. That's what they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they have to do.
Economic warfare.
Pull it, you know, destroy these goddamn banks and companies. You know, I mean, that are trying to destroy you. Trying to destroy you. You can do it. I don't know what that is.
Predatory.
Yeah.
Rajab Gupta, timeline of insider trading case against former Goldman Sachs director.
Iodine supplement supplies wiped out by nuclear fallout. Here are the foods that contain high levels of natural iodine. Japan's nuclear emergency
prompts panic buying in Tokyo.
Yeah. News of a serious radiation leak at Fukushima nuclear plant has sparked panic buying in Tokyo as some residents started to leave the capital to escape potential contamination. Several embassies advised their citizens to leave affected areas during Tokyo, including Tokyo, and some multinational companies either told staff to leave or consider relocating outside the city. As officials urged people living near the stricken plant to stay indoors, residents in capital, 150 miles to the south, began preparing for the possibility of a similar lockdown. And so they're buying out everything.
Well, because if you can't go out...
Yeah, you got to buy it. News of serious relay...
Experts were keen to stress,
yeah,
however, that only minute levels of radiation have been detected in Tokyo. Weather forecasters said winds near the atomic plant, which experienced the third explosion on Tuesday morning, were blowing in a southwesterly direction towards Tokyo, but would move in a westerly direction later in the day. People in the capital, home to 12 million, snapped up radios, torches, candles, fuel containers, and sleeping bags, while for the fourth day there was a run on bread, canned goods, instant noodles, bottled water, and other foodstuffs at supermarkets.
Retailers said the panic buying was reminiscent of the oil crisis in the 1970s. The electronics firm Panasonic said it was increasing production of batteries, which were being bought in large quantities as far away as Hiroshima in the southwest. And fears are rising that if the hoarding frenzy continues, it will affect the ability to deliver emergency supplies to the disaster zone. And the situation is hysterical, said Tamanio Matsuo.
Matsuo. You pronounce every letter in Japanese. Note there are no silence. Matsuo.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to pronounce them.
Noodle maker, Nissan Foods. People feel safer just by buying cup noodles.
Foreign journalists covering the nuclear crises, including reporters from BBC and CNN, withdrew from the Fukushima area. On Monday, the German magazine Der Spiegel said its veteran war correspondent was being pulled out of Tokyo. Tourists cut short holidays and descend on international airports in Tokyo and Osaka, seeking flights home. They included about 200 South Koreans who have now arrived back in Seoul. Liesl Strauss, a South African, said on Twitter on Tuesday morning, "I just woke up several calls and emails, family, husbands freaking out, it's time to go, flights booked to Singapore this PM. She added, "Realized, no use staying stressing and freaking my family out if I'm not helping and physically contributing. I want to, but reality is I'm not." So she's leaving.
The number of people stranded at Narita Airport near Tokyo rose after airlines canceled flights, but officials said there had been no surge in passenger numbers.
I don't believe that.
Yeah. It's kind of, if you lose electricity, water, gas, at least you can still eat bread.
Oh, boy.
Not a good thing. Not a good thing. Mm-hmm. And our time at University of Seton needs I like this. Kucinich is trying to end the Afghan war.
That'd be nice.
It's about a minute long. Let's see what he says.
House, be in order, please.
This is
today, a bipartisan coalition of members of Congress have introduced a privileged resolution calling for a vote in this Congress to end the war in Afghanistan. More than 60% of the American people want us out of there. This war is already approaching a cost of $500 billion. We have Americans who are losing their jobs. Their wages are being knocked down. We have Americans losing their homes, losing their retirement security. They can't send their schools, their kids to colleges they want. And we're spending all this money on a war that is a waste of time, money, blood, and treasure to try to prop up a corrupt regime in Afghanistan. Now, our occupation over there has fueled an insurgency. It's time for Congress to take its constitutional responsibilities under Article 1, Section 8. We haven't really done that with respect to Afghanistan. It's time for us to do that. Let's have an up or down vote. That's what this resolution is about. And I urge all members of Congress to consider supporting the privileged resolution that ends the war in Afghanistan. Thank you.
Well,
I wish that were true.
Yeah, you probably get no support for that.
Yeah.
Since they're all bought out by GE and Blackwater Security and
Lockheed Martin and
yes.
every other god awful.
Kellogg Brown and Root.
All I threatened by. Yeah. I'm tired of this, but this unfairly censored by YouTube.
Martial law declared in Bahrain.
Israeli spy cell found in northern Iraq. Doesn't surprise anybody. A senior Israeli intelligence official has reportedly established a secret operation room in northern Iraq to instigate anti-government protests in Syria in an effort to destabilize the country. The operation room, equipped with sophisticated surveillance technology, enables Tel Aviv to wiretap and even hijack the Syrian telecommunications network. A Press TV correspondent reported on Tuesday, the espionage project was reportedly aimed at destabilizing Syria and creating division among Syrians through developing spy cells operating inside Syria. Yeah, typical stuff.
Martial law declared in Bahrain following the deployment of armed mercenaries, confirmed use of nerve gas, and the compliance by Al Khalifa to allow Saudi and GCC troops and tanks to enter Bahrain in order to supposedly restore order, the Bahraini government has declared martial law. Press TV talks with Ralph Schoenman, author and political analyst, Berkeley, who encapsulates events and Al Khalifa's war crime atrocities leading up to the Arab invasion of Bahrain and the most recent response to this by the people of Bahrain.
Human awakening will cover U.S. and Europe. The wave of human awakening will reach all parts of the world, including the U.S. and Europe. Leaders of the U.S. and European government countries should not think that they will remain immune to this wave, IRNA quoted President Ahmadinejad as saying on Tuesday. They should not think that they promote trouble in the world because they are more exposed to dangers of the wave than others, he added. This is by Iranian press TV.
Arrogant powers in the world and their allies are nearing their collapse, the Iranian chief executive pointed out. President Ahmadinejad emphasized that leaders of arrogant powers, particularly the United States and the Israeli regime, are the main instigators of killing and crimes and violating the rights of nations. Nations will not be deceived by their campaigns, he said, noting that people hold the U.S. and Israel responsible for crimes and violations committed against them.
Yep. I think he's right. Okay. U.S. to lose fifth fleet in a few weeks. The U.S. will lose its fifth fleet in Bahrain in a matter of weeks because they have sided with the Al-Khalifa monarchy. Al-Ahmed said in an interview with Press TV on Monday, "This issue is already done. The Al-Khalifa is over. Dynasty is over. We are just awaiting for a few days or a few weeks," he added. And Ahmed pointed to the presence of the forces of Saudi Arabia and those of several Persian Gulf Cooperation Council members in Bahrain. "The United States gave the green light to these troops to go into Bahrain because the White House is carrying on the Saudi policy in Yemen and Bahrain." And, hang on one second.
He warned that top Iranian cleric Ayatollah Sheikh Isa Qasim issued a fatwa waging jihad against foreign troops in Bahrain. Bahrain will be burnt and the Saudis and the others will lose. Ahmed argued that under the international laws, the presence of PGC troops in Bahrain is an act of aggression and occupation, and the leaders of the invading countries are subject to prosecution by international court.
Accordingly, the Bahraini people have the right to fight against them, to resist them, and use violence against them, he pointed out. On Monday, Bahrain's fellow member of the Persian Cooperation Council, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates, Oman, and Qatar, dispatched their armed forces to the Persian Gulf island at Manama's request to quell nationwide protests against the Sunni-led monarchy's suppression of the Shia majority. Inspired by the Tunisian and Egyptian revolutions, tens of thousands of Bahrainians have poured into the streets of the capital since mid-February, and calling for an end to the Al-Khalifa's dynasty, which has ruled the country for almost two centuries. Demonstrators are keeping vigil in hundreds of tents, and the Manama's Pearl Square, which has become the epicenter of anti-government protests. At least seven people have been killed so far during the government clampdown.
On the peaceful demonstration.
Yeah. And, but we went up losing the fifth fleet down there. The base, but if they take over. Interesting. Let's see. Anything else we want to say? No.
Go back there.
Yeah.
Welcome to the new fascist fuel system. Take it or leave it, slavery or starvation. I'm sure those working middle class folks will jump on this type of propaganda and support their criminal government in pushing slavery as an option to people who've simply been forced out of work through this created depression we're sinking deeper and deeper into. What these people don't realize is in this scheme will be for everybody one day, including them, because, hey, we're all together, aren't we?
Yep, that means you too, Mr. and Mrs. Average Earner. Don't you know that the average wage is dropping? Can you see that you're getting worse off every day as the price of fuel and artificially hyped up to record levels, and food costs are on an upward curve with warnings of coming shortages, new taxes being imposed at a whim by the government to further impoverish the ordinary working person, to pay for illegal wars at present and new wars in the pipeline as the lunatics really do take over the asylum that is HM government, UK. They're talking about the England here.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it usually comes to us after it's there.
It always does. Yeah, let's see.
So let's see what they're doing to the poor English.
They're looting them. Of course, none of this affects them. The greedy criminal political elite who blatantly robbed the taxpayer from their extravagant salaries, fraudulent expenses, and exotic junkets.
Sounds like our Congress.
Yeah. It goes on and on. It's more of a rant than anything, but, you know, we're used to that. And they're saying, rise up, folks. Rise up. This is by the sovereign independent. And, let's make it. See if there's anything new.
Yeah. The revolution has begun.
Yeah, it's more of a, that's the Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Do it next.
We just have a few minutes. That was mostly yesterday's
news. Oh, yeah.
Why don't you go to Natural News?
Okay.
We'll go to our website.
Okay.
That we like. What's John Villa's played?
Sorry?
I said Joan Baez. There was something that she was playing.
Yeah, on Baez on YouTube. Incompetence. You can only have it for so long. Picture of
Obama?
Yeah.
Well, he is incompetent.
Here's something about
Corexit.
Yeah. New report from NASA finds that nearly 50% of the population along the Gulf Coast is experiencing sickness, indicative of chemical poisoning related to the BP oil spill. Up to 95% of the oil, Gulf oil, sunk to bottom by toxic Corexit, where it remains today. Corexit remains crude oil 11 times more lethal.
A military operation sprayed by unmarked aircraft corrects that it's stored at military bases.
Sudden surge in Gulf cancers. People are bleeding from every orifice. Dolphins, turtles, and sea life internally bleeding. 40 million people poisoned.
Corrects that it's a cruel, slow-killing, genocidal depopulation Agenda 21 tool aimed at people, their water supply, food, and the land.
Along the Gulf Coast, a marketing blitz for spring break is rolling out as the oil from the BP blowout 11 months ago continues to roll in along the increasing numbers of dead infant dolphins in numbers completely without precedent. The beaches remain polluted with toxic oil and dispersants, and
even as local politicians and government officials insist everything is fine and the oil miraculously gone. Thousands of pounds are collected each day from the few areas that remain under scrutiny, all those being in highly visible resort areas.
Jeez. In one zone from Fort Morgan Beach in Alabama, a recorded 17,000 pounds was collected in one day after a winter storm rolled through. Along the beaches of Alabama and areas not frequented by media or guests, dead infant dolphins are left uncollected in the sand. And current plans by mayors of resort communities along the Gulf Coast will have thousands of vacationers, including at-risk populations, once again making sandcastles and sunbathing on toxic polluted beaches. I don't think so. When this happened, I said it would be a human and environmental catastrophe of massive proportions, and that is what it is, despite the efforts to make media silence to cover up.
It was bloody obvious what would follow oil pollution on such a scale, compounded to extreme levels by the lethal toxins Corexit. The BP was allowed to pour into the waters to make the oil sink and thus hide the true extent of the disaster. The difference now is that daily global publicity when it happened and in the immediate aftermath has been replaced as the suffering of people and sea life gets even worse.
Let me go on. Let's go on from this. Because this says that over 50% of the people are...
Government, here. It's government data collector, which is being released. Let's see.
Okay, it says BP continues to shut down the few cleanup efforts still underway with the approval of federal government at the Gulf Coast Ecosystem Restoration Task Force meeting in New Orleans. Recently, scientists, NGOs, and concerned citizens demanded to know how the ecosystem could be restored when the basic cleanup of the oil has been made impossible by any known technology after the dispersant sank it to the clean ocean floor. Health concerns remain at the forefront of dialogue as a new report by the Louisiana Bucket Brigade finds that nearly 50% of the population along the Gulf Coast is experiencing sickness indicative of chemical poisoning related to the explosion. Now, why is the mainstream fucking media, all right, talking about this? They aren't. They haven't even been down there. They're not even talking about it. I mean, you know, 50% of the people are dying, all right? Let's see. 50% of the population is experiencing sickness, indicative of chemical poisoning related to BP oil spill. The CDC assertions in a brochure distributed at the meeting that the level of chemical exposure related to the spill are not a cause for concern was ridiculed and embarrassment to many of the officials present.
Orange Beach, Alabama, March 3, 2011. Government data collected during that oil spill last summer, which is now being released by one of the scientists on the NASA team, strengthens claims that oil and dispersant was brought on shore in rain during the spill. The chief mission coordinating scientist on the NASA remote sensing mission to the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico was Ira Liefer, PhD from the University of California, Santa Barbara. Dr. Liefer has been working with natural oil spills and natural methane bubble flows for the last decade. He is in the process of releasing some of the government data collected during the spill. The vast majority of this data has been suppressed and is not available to scientists, the media, or general public. The data was collected on boats at the sea surface, on airplanes, over the Gulf, and by satellite.
The data is being released, which was collected by the NASA, mission to the Gulf, shows that the toxic compounds released from the BP spill became airborne and significant quantities were brought ashore by precipitation, thereby exposing coastal populations to chemical poisoning. And the this represents something new and unique, not observed in previous oil spills. It helps explain why there were numerous reports by people living along the Gulf Coast that it was raining oil and dispersant during the summer months. And we stated that, and we brought that up on our shows.
After spending some time together in New Orleans, I spoke to Ira Lee for at length in Mexico City. JC, how is the data you are referring to collected, and based on that data, what degree of concentration did you find of what you would consider toxic compounds? JC.
That was JC again.
What about the population along the coast in the areas where there has been so many reports of people complaining of health problems, specifically southern Louisiana, Mississippi, the Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, and Shore area of Alabama? Do you think the data you collected has direct correlation to those populations and what they were inhaling?
Ira Leifer says people in the Gulf of Mexico were not warned that the air was going to be bad, and they had clean air in much of the area right before the spill. It is a very different kind of situation than people who chose to go and try to make money in Mexico City. A lot of people in the Gulf lived there because they enjoy the Gulf, and they didn't want to move. Los Angeles.
We didn't want to move too.
Los Angeles and New York are the big American polluted environments. They chose to stay where the environment was pretty clean. In terms of the health implications for coastal communities, I think there are two things. I have classified there being three different approaches by which atmospheric phenomena related to the oil spill can cause health effects. One is that the volatiles just breathing the stuff a long way from the incident site. A second one is aerosol. So when oil comes up on the beaches as the wave breaks, there is aerosol generated in the air, and that can be breathed in by people. And the last one, which we discovered, is the rain. I will add a fourth one, which is dispersants. Clearly, spraying dispersants near populated areas is a bad idea. If dispersants are aerosol, that is a bad thing as well. I do not have data on the dispersants, so I will speak to what I do know. With regards to the volatiles, there are two things. The main thing is that volatiles can go a long way on in the wind. And, those poor people are
dead. Oh, it's horrible.
And those people down there, and nobody's covering it. Nobody's covering it. And they're blaming the Japanese for not covering their nightmare. And we got a nightmare down here that's been going on for a year.
The one thing I love...
50% of the people.
A picture of It's Only a Matter of Time of Obama, and it says incompetence.
Yeah. You can only hide for so long.
And boy, he sure is incompetent.
Absolutely.
I don't know which is worse, Obama or Bush.
Bush was incompetent. There was no question about it. But Obama...
He didn't come in saying he was a good guy.
He didn't come in saying he was even competent.
No.
We thought this guy might have some brains in his head, but this guy's a complete... Obama's a complete and utter sellout. You know, just a nightmare.
What an idiot. Just a
freaking
puppet.
Nightmare. So it's like, we're doomed.
We had a white puppet, now we have a black puppet.
So anyway, I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight, and maybe we can. That would have been a good one to read. Maine town becomes first to declare food sovereignty.
Sedgwick, Maine. I don't know where that is. That's down east.
Yeah. The town of Sedgwick, Maine, currently leads the pack as far as food sovereignty is concerned. Local residents recently voted unanimously at a town hall meeting to pass an ordinance that reinforces citizens' God-given right to produce, process, sell, purchase, and consume local foods of their choosing, which includes even state and federally restricted foods like raw milk. The declaration is one of the first of its kind to be passed in the U.S., and it is definitely not the last, and we congratulate them.
Several other Maine towns, including Penobscot, Brooksville, and Blue Hill, all have similar ordinance up for vote in the coming weeks.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them. that's pretty much that.
And Leo will be talking to you tomorrow night,
yep.
And then Friday night we'll
George.
Be here with George. And
yeah.
Until then, peace.
Yeah. Have a good evening.
Good night, folks.
Oops. What happened? Not gonna.